From the On The Go Media Podcast Network, this is the Chuckle Huddle, your dose of mediocre sports analysis with a laugh. And now, here's Mitch Williams and Josh Hamlin.
From the On The Go Media Podcast Network, this is the Chuckle Huddle alongside Josh Hamlin. I'm Mitch Williams, and should we just let this run for ever?
Yeah, it was a really, really good start to the Masters on Thursday. Got to see Jack Nicklaus go out there, Gary Player go out there and get some solid swings.
Tom Watson.
Yeah, that was really neat to see that as the sun was rising there on a beautiful pasture of Augusta and the magnolias chilling out. And have you seen some of the excellent food they have down there? I'd like to try one of those peaches and cream ice cream sandwiches, and it's affordable for any American, so that's awesome.
I was going to say, the egg salad sandwiches, I can get like four of them, and it'd be a combined $8, only $2 a sandwich, and get yourself a glass of orange juice some, so more reasonable than your fast food restaurants. So we'll just keep this rolling once it's, I think this is what, not 1 hour loop we have. Mm-hmm. So we're good to go for the whole podcast. No, yesterday was interesting because Justin Rose got off to a good start. As we record this on Friday, April 11th, we should mention Rory McIlroy was 4 under. Then he ended the final four holes with 2 double bogeys. But as we record this, Bryson DeChambeau is making a run for it. Justin Rose is the clubhouse leader, but DeChambeau's right there, as is Rory McIlroy. Not a huge fan of Rory McIlroy. He seems kind of arrogant, but DeChambeau, I like his fire. Justin Rose, he's had so many good starts to the Masters. He needs to finish this off. Hopefully he can. Scheffler, as some of those Englishmen say, Scotty Scheffler, he's still in it as well. So, Josh, do you have any input on the Masters this year? Because I know you're full of wisdom on the Masters.
Yes, Scotty Scheffler was last year's champion, was really impressed with how he was able to clean up his holes on the back half. I was listening to some of the updates from national radio yesterday, and they said he was in some spots where he needed to finish on par so he could finish 4 under, was able to do so. I really like how he finishes on the green in certain situations where he feels like the pros may feel like, hey, that's going to be a tough putt, but he finishes. So he knows the course well, had a really good round last year, so hoping he can get another green jacket. But as you had mentioned, a really good stack at the top. DeChambeau has really starts the hole well. He drives better than anybody in the pro game right now. And then Justin Rose, your clubhouse leader right now at -8. And that, you can't ask for a better start on your first 2 days.
There's only 1 under today because he's wrapped up. Now, you mentioned DeChambeau's one of the best drivers, but he's so aggressive when he drives, so you know what, you have a good game on behind that, a good chipping game, because, yeah, he may drive it 330 yards each drive, but it might be going, he might hook it, he might have a slice-a-roo down, he's right-handed, so down the right side. So you got to have a good chipping game. And then, have you seen his putt formation, DeChambeau? The arm can't be any more straight and stiff, and it's a new putting stance he started a couple years ago, and he actually got himself in shape after COVID hit. He took that time to get shape because beforehand he was way off on his drives. They were powerful, but he was way off, and his chipping wasn't good, nor was his putting. His putting stance changed. He got more effective driving as well. So, man, Josh, we're almost 3.5 minutes, and we're all golf, and I like this. I like this.
Well, and one of the things that has plagued pro golfers at the Masters the last, it feels like it's been the last 5 years, is there's always some form of weather that comes in. It's either windy or it rains.
That was a couple years
ago. The third or fourth rounds. So I'm hoping they can have a clean weekend, not have the weather impacted, have it be as beautiful as it has been the first and second rounds so far, because it always seems they'll have some form of rain during the third or fourth round. And a couple years ago you had mentioned they had to finish on Monday, and now that does is throw you off, especially if you have to play more than 18 on a day to finish your rounds.
So Josh, I just want to do this real quick. Now, maybe you're not a big sucker for this like I am, but this theme is up there with like Turner Sports CBS theme for college basketball. It's up there with, I don't watch a lot of professional football like I used to, but the CBS NFL theme is pretty solid. Would you say this is up there? Because this not only is peaceful, but you know all the tradition behind it. And yes, I'm a golf nut. I am spending 5 minutes already talking about golf, and I don't care. It's a PGA Tour, the first of four majors. Is this one of the top themes you think in sports?
Yes, yes, definitely for golf, because of the majors, I haven't heard any other that have a theme that's comparable to this. They may have one, but it's not as nostalgic, it's not as noticeable, and it doesn't give you the feels, because there's a lot of beautiful PGA Tour courses that they play on over the course of the year. I'm really impressed when they go to Pebble Beach, and I really like when they go over and play the British Open, and that's kind of on rotation. They'll have it in the UK, they'll have it in Ireland, and that's really beautiful the time of year they have that as well. But yeah, the theme is second to none as far as golf themes go, and sports themes, it's definitely in my top five.
So this is the first of four majors. PGA Championship comes next month. Xander Schauffele won that last year. Then the U.S. Open, which Bryson DeChambeau won. A great rally by him, a great save on par to end that U.S. Open. And then it goes the Open. They don't call it British Open really anymore. That is the Open, and that happens in mid-July. So anyway, as we move on with our podcast, we have to remember that this is the first of four majors, but the purse too. Pretty good too in the Masters. I mean, you finish 30th. Guess what? You're bringing home a chunk of change.
Yes, a lot of money for the winner, and just to finish in the top 10 is really something. So yeah, it's going to be a really good weekend, and I really appreciate the coverage that CBS and ESPN provide. They actually put in studio people there. Scott Van Pelt is usually doing Sports Center on site, and then Jim Nance is second to none for coverage throughout the weekend. And we had mentioned this on the Chuckle Huddle either an episode or two episodes ago, that is his ultimate goal, that he'd love to retire for the 100th Masters. So that'd be really neat.
That's coming down the pike. So on our podcast today, we're going to talk about the PGA Tour, as we're 7 minutes into that already, but also going to be talking about the Final Four on the men's and women's side from last weekend, among other things on the podcast. Remember, opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the announcers and do not necessarily represent those of On The Go Media and its employees. So that's kind of our thoughts on the PGA Tour going on in terms of the Masters. Again, that's one of four majors. The purses are huge. I would like to just finish 40th once, Josh, and I think I could retire considering my life here, but the purse is unreal, and the history behind the Masters is so huge. The green jacket, the ceremonial tee shots taken by the three we mentioned, Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player. Gary Player, by the way, is 89. Then when he does his tee shot, he turns around and gives that little high kick. He's in better shape than I ever was, and he's 89, I'm 30. So anyway, we got more of the Chuckle Huddle coming up on the On The Go Media Podcast Network.
The Sports Beat programs from Radio On The Go Sports have expanded to 90 minutes. Tune in the Mortz Water Company Sports Beat at 8:30 a.m. on 104.9 KLMJ and the Brothers Market Sports Beat at 10 a.m. on 99 The Wave each Saturday. The expanded programs will feature interviews with the latest in-season high school sports coaches, student athletes, and more, with a focus on local communities. Each show is also available on demand at radioonthego.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The music continues on, and despite our next topic being the college basketball Final Four, we're still going to use the Masters theme because it only comes once a year. We got to wait another 365 days for the Masters to start. But going back to the Final Four and the championship, we'll start on the men's side because it was much more exciting, and I don't care who, I'm not going to argue that. There was just, the women's side was a joke in terms of how boring it was. The men's side, and I mean boring by score, that's what I mean by that. On the men's side, you had, first of all, Florida and Auburn go down to the wire, Josh. It was Florida that came out on top. And Todd Golden, a young coach, but he really relates to the kids, I think, because of the age. And Walter Clayton Jr., obviously, as you called him, William, last week. So good job on that. But Clayton Jr. had a great game, Final Four especially. He struggled in the title game. But first, Florida in that Final Four game against Auburn, they were down like 49-40, about 12 minutes to go in the game. And they were able to rally back and beat Auburn again. That was a team that Florida had beaten in the regular season. It kind of took Auburn away from that number one ranking. So I guess your thoughts on that one first.
The Final Four game? Yes.
Florida and Auburn, like I just alluded to, yes.
Yeah, Florida, that doesn't surprise me. They had the track record to beat Auburn all year long, and Walter Clayton Jr. went off, and he stepped up when they needed him to, and they kind of got Auburn out of their element. They kind of started to settle there late in the game, and when they start to settle and they want... I'm watching the broadcast, they were the national media was frustrated that they went away from Jani Broom. In the first half, that was their bread and butter. They were working it into the post, and then he was either scoring or distributing because he's the nucleus of that team. And then in the second half, they kind of went away from that, and that's where things started to go awry there for Auburn, that they quit working it inside, and it was the guard play that just started to settle and try and force things. And this Florida team had beat Auburn before, denied them a SEC tournament championship, and went on to win the championship themselves. So it doesn't matter how old your coach is. It's the mantra that they bring to your team and what they can awaken in their players. And able to do that this year was golden for the Gators. Chomp, chomp, chomp their way to a title.
Well, in attacking the glass, usually Auburn wins that, and they were minus 9 on rebounds. I remember Florida rebound. I couldn't remember by how much. It was 39-30. Thus, Auburn is very good at second-chance opportunities. They didn't get them. So, there's that. The Final Four game between Houston and Duke. I'll be honest, I didn't watch an ounce of this. I've watched highlights and replay on my TV, but live I didn't watch it for a couple reasons. One, first half I seen it was like 30-18 Duke. I thought, oh, good grief, the big media people are going to love this because Duke's going to be in the title game, blah, blah, blah. And then even when I was going to bed, it was like, it was a 9-point game with like 2 minutes to go. I thought, this sucks. I don't like Duke. I've said that several times. I wanted to see Houston win. I wanted to see him win the whole thing. And then, well, the unexpected happened, and we finally had that massive March moment where Houston was down and almost out. They rallied. Duke had one field goal make in the final 10-plus minutes. Glorious, in my opinion, just because I don't like Duke.
And as I had told you last week on the Chuckle Huddle, the team with more heart was going to come get it done, and Houston had to play with more heart in that final minute of the game. As I'm going to go to the play-by-play and just take a look at this. They were down, as you had mentioned, by 9 late in the game. I think there was like a minute 27. They were down 66-59.
That's a 7-point game.
A 7-point game with 126
math,
left.
Not your strong suit.
And then Sharp gets a couple of free throws, gets it down to a 5-point game. The last bucket by Duke was a free throw by Knipple with 114 left. From that point, Houston went on a 9-0 run, a 3-pointer for Emmanuel Sharp, a 2-pointer for Tugler, and then a couple of free throws as well for Juwan Roberts, a couple free throws for L.J. Crier to put it away. And for Duke fans, that had to be a drop-jaw moment that Cooper Flagg had a chance to take the lead there with 8 seconds left, missed the jumper off the front
well
of the rim.
Short, and then, great defense.
Yep, really, really good defense, because you would have thought, had Flagg had a chance to have a timeout to think about that, he would have drove. But that must have been the way they drew up the play to try and set him up for a jumper.
The thing is, here's the thing. Someone sent me this. Dylan did, by the way, who I keep mentioning on here. He sent me some that showed all of Duke's 4 losses, including this. The last play, not necessarily last play of the game, but the last time Duke had the ball down late in the game like Clemson, it was Cooper Flagg with the ball the whole way and either turned it over or the shot was well short. And friend brought up a good point. They had not been in many close games. When they did, they faltered near the end. Now, not meaning faltered by they got blown out. They just didn't hit that clutch shot. And Houston, props to them. But then you go to Monday night. Houston led that game for about 35-plus minutes. Now, they got as big a lead as like 45-34 early in the second half. But Florida just would not quit. Now, there was a couple things in there. First of all, Florida had like 5 fouls called on them early in the second half. Houston had none. The refs then proceed to call 3 fouls in like 10 seconds on Houston. And it wasn't decided by the officials. I'm just saying all of a sudden, Florida kind of said its piece. Todd Golden got a little irritated, the Florida coach. They got teed up. Remember that too, Todd Golden, the bench, I think, got teed up. And that's when Florida started to rally and started to get a few calls. And I think Florida was all of a sudden a double bonus, and Houston still had Florida still had to commit two more fouls before Houston was in the double bonus. So that kind of flipped a switch on everything. And Florida now, that's their third national championship. And that's all coming since 2005. So I don't know if they're blue blood, but during that time, here's some schools what they have since the end of the 2004-05 season. Duke has two, for reference. Kansas has two. Kentucky has one. North Carolina has at least two, if not three. I can't remember that on top of my head. Villanova has two. So a little perspective there. Florida, as of late, kind of that powerhouse in basketball. And I didn't mind Florida winning this. I just wanted Houston because Calvin Sampson is a little older than Todd Golden. And I kind of want to see him get that title before he retires. Now, they're ranked preseason number one in a lot of the mock polls for next year. Houston is. But I don't know. I guess your thoughts. I'll shut up here now. I've been going way too long. Start the match game theme on me. Your thoughts on the title game.
Yeah, this Florida team, they're in rare company. I saw a stat. They are one of few programs in the country to have three national championships in football and also three national championships in basketball. And there's not many programs at the D1 level that can say that. In this Houston-Florida game, you had mentioned Houston had a decent lead there early on in the second half, but things really tightened up, I would say, over the final 6 minutes of that second half. It was tied at 51 with 6:28 to go, and it was within one score the rest of the way, and Houston had its final lead. They were up 63-62, and then Florida, as you had mentioned, able to take that lead on a couple of free throws. And my frustration for Houston is you dream about those moments where you have a chance to win the game at the end of the game, and Houston did not even get that chance because of how well Florida drew up their defense. But Houston didn't even get a shot off.
Did you see the ATOs, as they call them, after timeout plays for Houston in the last 2 minutes? They either ended in turnovers or they ended in just stupid shots. One was like a baseline jumper contested with 15 seconds on the shot clock. Their offense last 2 minutes was not good. And perfect example was the game ended where the kid went up with the ball and then it kind of got bobbled around between the defender. He was not allowed to touch, and I'm not sure the 100% the rule is on that, but he like backed away. All the other players had flooded to the other side, and Florida took the ball away. Game was over. I mean, it ended so oddly. It was exciting. I'm not saying that. It was a good game, but like you said, I wish Houston would have gotten a shot at least a decent look at three, but Florida also was crowding top of the key well as well. They kind of gambled. They flooded the top of the key, saying, if the worst thing that's going to happen to us is they're going to tie the game. We are not allowing a good look at a three, and they end up not doing that.
Well, I think if he would have touched the ball, by rule, that would have been a travel because he pump-faked and both feet left the ground, and he came down with it. So that would have been, if he would have touched it, that would have been a travel and a turnover. But I've never been in a situation like that, but you think, Mitch, if he would have attempted the shot anyway, would he have been fouled? Because that defender, the closeout was so strong, do you think they would have called a foul if he would have attempted the shot instead of trying to come down with the ball? It was a block, there would have been contact.
And the way the refs were calling that game, who knows, a whistle could have blown. I have no idea, and who knows, luck would have had it. Houston only made two free throws, it goes overtime. But it was an exciting Final Four and championship nonetheless.
Yes, for a chalky tournament, we finally got an exciting game in the biggest game of said tournament. So
all three of those games last week, I mean, they were good. So like my order was Houston, then Auburn, then Florida, then Duke. At least it wasn't Duke. And I don't mind Todd Golden. He's done a great job because Florida, Billy Donovan left for the NBA. And then Mike White comes in. He doesn't win a... he gets to an Elite Eight in 2017, I believe it was, but not much else success. And Todd Golden comes in. He's a great transfer portal guy, and you need that this day and age. He's only 39. He can relate to the kids because he just played college basketball not that long ago. So, Florida might be in it for the long haul.
Well, and then the SEC wouldn't have heard the end of it till baseball season in the College World Series because they had 14 teams in the tournament, and if they wouldn't have had a champion, the national media would have eaten them up because you have 14 chances to win a title and you didn't have somebody win. So credit to the SEC for, as good as that league was, having a champion emerge in a Final Four that featured two SEC teams. So.
And we go to the women's side, and I'm going to give a quick thought on this. First of all, like when picking a bracket, I knew UConn was winning it all. I know people wanted to say, oh, South Carolina, they're still very good. UCLA's great, blah, blah, blah. There was just something in that UConn-South Carolina game in the regular season back in February where I'm like, no one's beating this team anymore. And I have to watch Gino Auriemma. I can't stand the guy. I don't care. He's so arrogant. There are people that grow the sport. Then there's people that just build their own resume and don't care about the sport. That's Gino, and that's all I'm going to say about him. But in the same regard, they clocked South Carolina again. That was like a 10-12 point game, and UConn went like a 20-4 run. They were up almost 30 latter portions of that second half. So that's the title game. UConn, first of all, clocked UCLA. The player for UCLA, the big post player, you know who I'm talking about, Lauren Betts.
Yeah.
There, I couldn't think of the name. She was very ineffective. You got to give UConn credit. And that was a boring game. That was the second game last Friday night. And then South Carolina, Texas, close early. South Carolina pulled away. These were the two best teams left. And then 23-point blowout. And I hope this ain't going back to the trend that women's basketball was in for a while, where mostly UConn is dominating its opponents. I don't think it's going to be because of the transfer portal. But after several years of great title games, you know, Iowa's in a couple of them. I know Mississippi State, Notre Dame had a couple of one good game. Baylor, Notre Dame, all that. But this was boring.
What made it interesting for me was the fun storylines for the players. UConn had not won a title in 9 years, and I was really excited to see Paige Beckers, AZ Fudd, Sarah Strong, the big three for this UConn team, get a chance to hoist a title, especially for Paige Beckers. What a collegiate career she had to try and navigate. There were some really down moments where she had to play with grit, had to really work hard to get healthy again. She missed a season and a half due to torn ACLs, and then you have the heartbreak of last year falling to Caitlin Clark in Iowa in her first Final Four. So was really excited to see Paige Beckers and AZ Fudd and this UConn team get a chance to hoist the title, even though they have a championship pedigree at that program. Multiple titles with Gino. I think they're at 12.
Yes.
So, but for Paige Beckers, that's what I care about. And she's going to be the number one overall pick, guarantee it, in the WNBA draft. Too bad the Indiana Fever don't have that, because I think watching her and Caitlin Clark on the same team would be magical. But that's what I was excited about. And we don't need back-to-back champions. South Carolina's not going anywhere. They're one of the blue bloods in women's basketball.
Yeah, but UConn already had almost they have now a dozen titles.
But it was the first in 9 years. We have back-to-back champions. So,
man, that's
that is a long time.
That's a long time.
Not in the Sam Hill.
Yeah, it's a long time.
In the Sam Hill, Josh.
But you're not going to have teams that are just going to completely dominate. You mentioned the transfer portal. It's just as effective for the women's teams as it is for changing programs on the men's side. You just hope that it's not just the power, what is going to end up being the Power 5 again, because the Pac-12 is going to revive itself. But having the mid-majors have success as well is my hope for women's basketball, because one of the great things about collegiate sports is your storylines, and I don't just want, oh, the big schools have all the storylines. It's more fun. Everybody has it.
Yeah, so there's our thoughts on the... I need to calm down, Josh. Need a little zen. I was too wound up. I don't like Auriemma. I don't like UConn. He's too arrogant. Can't stand him. I need to calm down. Listen to that piano.
It's kind of interesting. Both UConn coaches kind of give off that vibe.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it's hard to root for him. And what's funny is Dan Hurley makes Gino Auriemma look humble, and that's amazing. So anyway, we got another segment of Beyond the Blank coming up next on the Chuckle Huddle on the On The Go Media Podcast Network.
Listening to the radio, driving in your car. Radio gets results.
Attention business owners and managers.
Are you ready to make 2025 your breakthrough year? Radio on the Go, KLMJ 104.9 and KQCR 99 The Wave brings you the power program that transforms your advertising strategy. Imagine 25 free ads every month, helping your business reach more customers than ever before. But hurry, this incredible offer must start in January. Now is the time to let radio work for your business. Speak with our team today, and let's make your business come alive in 2025. I'm Bob Schaefer. Choose Radio on the Go because radio gets results.
For the third straight segment, actually fourth straight segment, going back to last week, the piano brings us back, Josh. It's still relaxing.
Yeah, I enjoy it. We should have some kind of nice music bed every week. It just adds to it.
Wait a minute, what are you saying? You don't like things like this? There we got two music beds in one. First one, isn't that nice? Yeah, you got fast guitar music with piano and slow piano in the background. Anyway, we have to move on. I keep talking, babbling about stuff that doesn't relate to anything. And Josh, it is time for another edition of
Beyond the Blank.
Beyond the Blank here, April 11th, 2025. We got more fill in the blanks. I want to talk about the transfer portal for Iowa and Iowa State. We'll talk for one for each team anyway. Iowa in the transfer portal on the men's side right now, it has been blank. So, I mean, what are your just brief thought, I guess, on that?
It's been the Bulldogs. How many Bulldogs can we go and track down? Because I think they're on three or four.
Drake the Iowa transfer. Bulldogs, the Drake Hawkeyes?
Straight up, yes. Well, it feels like, yeah, which that is how the transfer portal has gone. When you have a coach go somewhere else, it's a lot easier for the players to follow, because before they had the transfer portal, they didn't consider it to be the portal, you would have to sit a year if you were going to go to a different college or university. So with the new rule that you can go and play now, you have these coaches that are moving. I'm sure you can say that about all the mid-major coaches that have moved. They've had at least three players come with them. And for some programs, that's a culture shock. For others, it's a nice boost of adrenaline. And for the Hawkeyes, I hope it's a boost of adrenaline. But you want to try and keep who you recruited as well. And it's been frustrating for Iowa because you lost two of your considered to be top players. I consider Josh Dix to be a top player. Owen Freeman, he could have left if he wanted to.
He was on his way out regardless if his Freeman was bad.
Frustrating to see they both went to Creighton. So...
I don't mind McDermott, and I don't mind Josh Dix. Like, if it was just Josh Dix on that team, I root for him. Since Owen Freeman is there, I'm rooting against him. Like, and then Price Sanford goes to Nebraska. I don't mind Hoiberg. I don't care what they do. It's not like that's a great program. Now, I never watched TCU men's hoops much, and I hope Brock Harding doesn't do well. Like, the only one I want to do well is Josh Dix, but I don't want the team to, because that means Owen Freeman's doing well. Does that make sense? Oh. Iowa's transfer portal on the men's side has been expected there. I think you and I are on the same wavelength there. It's just he's bringing in all – that's what happened with Mark Byington when he went from James Madison to Vanderbilt. Well, look at Darren DeVries. He took his son out to West Virginia, now to Bloomington. We'll see where they end up next year because his son will have another year yet. So I want to say the Iowa State women now, because they landed a very good point guard from Arizona. I didn't realize Arizona's coach, the national runners-up from 21, Adia Barnes, is actually leaving. She became coach somewhere else. I have to look it up as you give me your answer. But Iowa State women portal so far has been blank, Josh.
Retooling. It really has, because I had mentioned they were going to need a facilitator after the exit of Emily Ryan and her amazing career as one of the leaders and assist leaders on that Iowa State team. And so for the Iowa State women to get another ball handler that is really good at finding those open players and keeping the offense rolling, that's a really good pickup. And she still has a lot of years of eligibility. So a really good pickup for Iowa State.
And I'd say it's been stellar, because Iowa was looking at her. Now, all these Hawkeye fan and Hawkeye media people can say what they want. But at the end of the day, they lost state transfer to Iowa State. That has me worried about Jen Jensen's not doing well in the portal. Apparently, they don't have much to sell. And they obviously don't have the NIL to keep competing in the Big Ten if they're going to keep missing on all these transfers, because there's plenty to sell on the women's side right now. The crowd, the championship, the conference championships, the Final Four banners. If that's not enough, and you, I mean, the NIL money's not there, then that tells me the NIL at Iowa is a massive joke. And I can give you a couple examples of why. Cade McNamara is example A, exhibit A in that regard. So, yeah, that's Iowa NIL. But for Iowa State, to get Williams, and then you're going to have her run the point, you're going to have Addie Brown kind of be in that guard forward position, just depending on lineups. And of course, Crooks will be back again. She reaffirmed her status to stay at Iowa State. So now the thing is, we'll see if they live up to expectations. Preseason top 10 to first round exit for Iowa State this year. So we'll see if they rebound next year. Next question, going back to the PGA Tour and golf in general, Josh. My favorite golfer to watch right now is blank, and I'm going to give two because I can't decide. It's either Bryson DeChambeau because of his aggressive driving style, or Scheffler because how consistent and calm he is. I probably lean towards Scheffler just because in that regard, but they have guys like Xander Schauffele that broke through last year. Then you have guys like Justin Rose are looking for their first Masters after having so many great starts at the Masters. But I'd say Scheffler just over DeChambeau.
I have three. When Tiger Woods is healthy, he is really fun to watch, but he's had a string of injuries. He has a torn ACL right now, so a tough break for him. Ricky Fowler is really cool. He's always in the middle of the pack, but he'll surprise you at certain tournaments when he's really on, and so he's a lot of fun to watch. Really enjoyed his play on that new league that they have during the winter time, where they play in an arena in L.A. I don't remember what the name of it was, but he had a team on that.
Live?
Yeah, no, it was something else. It was something else ESPN was sponsoring. I'll have to look it up. But he was on one of the teams that was playing for the title in that. And then Scottie Scheffler, yeah, he is complete. He's been world's number one or world's number two, it feels like, the last 3 years, and he is showcasing it every time he takes the course.
Who are the other two besides Tiger?
Ricky Fowler and Scottie Scheffler.
Did you realize Fowler didn't even qualify for the Masters this year? He's been so off the last year or so.
But in the past, he has been really fun to watch.
Oh, okay. I'm sure you watch a lot of it, Josh.
Yes, I used to watch golf.
Yeah, I got you.
And I'll watch the majors. Yeah,
you watch the majors. Okay, which one's the next one, then?
You had mentioned the PGA Championship is next.
And then?
Then you had mentioned that it's the...
So proceed. I had to get off the phone there real quick. We had to pause the podcast. But after the U.S. Open is the...
Then it'd be the Open.
Good. Yeah. You learned. It's just called the Open.
And that's the one that you play for the spigot, and that's really cool.
Yeah, and that course over there at Scotland or wherever it's at, it's always, there's no trees. It's all brown brush and all that. So very unique. Rolling hills. It's a very unique course. I would never want to do that. It's a very odd course over there in England countries there. All right. I see you got your Pop-Tarts over there. My favorite snack to have is what?
Ooh. I really enjoy Pop-Tarts. But I'd say it's tied with the balance breaks that Sargento has. They usually they'll have a fruit, a nut, and cheese, or sometimes they'll have crackers and cheese, and it's just something fun to take on the go when I'm out doing broadcasts or have road trips or something, just something quick to grab and go.
Reese's Fast Break Bars. You've seen me.
Yep, during football season. You were.
Oh, no, it's all season, every year.
Yeah, but that's the only time that we're headed somewhere. So, and that's when you'll have your snacks getting
all
ready
right.
for football.
So, we talked about the Iowa men in terms of the transfer portal. So, Ben McCollum will win blank games year one. We'll just say regular season. So, it's about 31 games, 11 non conference, 20 in conference,
19.
So that'd be 19 and 12. I was going to say, they haven't finished out the transfer portal at all. Like, it's still, there's no roster yet. I'll say 17 and 14, just based on what I see right now. And that my idea could change, but as we record this, that we don't have they don't have full roster on April 11th, I'll say 17-14, which is the same amount of wins that they had last year. Let's see. Iowa women's basketball will land blank decent transfers this offseason. I'll say a big fat zero.
Yeah,
that's
I don't,
unfortunate.
I don't think that they're going to go and hunt down any transfers either. Or they're going to try, but they're not going to be successful in that pursuit.
They're trying.
Yeah.
They tried the Williams kid that went to Iowa State, and they also tried that girl that went from, I can't remember where she was from, but she went to Washington, the Washington Huskies. The USC guard, yeah. She played at Carver, and somehow Iowa still couldn't get her. It's a joke between what Jen Jensen must do in these meetings and the NIL. It's ridiculous. I don't know what goes on in the meetings, but good grief. The best Major League Baseball, I see the fly the W flag in here, and if you can't see it, then your eyesight's not working. The best Major League Baseball mascot, Josh, is what? It might be based on color, might be based on the actual mascot. What is it? Oh, I gotta think, huh?
I'd say the Florida Marlins.
Based on?
Their logo is sick. It is really cool.
The fish?
Yeah, yep, and it's jumping out of the water, and they rebranded. They used to be the Florida Marlins, and there was no color to it. Now they have a cool mix of black, red, and a light blue, and it's a really cool logo.
Interesting. Okay, I got to think of some here. Major League Baseball, I got to care. How do I start this, Josh? I don't know. Who's out there?
Well, you have the Giants, Dodgers.
Boring.
The Diamondbacks, they have a cool logo.
The Diamondbacks, yeah. There you go. I like the Diamondbacks. I was just thinking about them.
Yeah, Arizona, yeah.
But no, I remember when Randy Johnson was pitching for them, they had like purple and blue color, mm-hmm. spot on, and they used the snake head actually.
Yeah, that's their throwback.
The alternate?
They'll wear now, yep.
Okay. All right, this one I'm going to have an answer for right away. I got to think. I have it down to two, and I'll think of one. The best minor league baseball mascot is what? Now, if you need to go Google some real quick, you can, because I have it down to. I have it down to two, and I'm really debating which one to say. I'm going to say the Rocky Mountain Vibes. It is a s'more. Look up the Rocky Mountain Vibes real quick. The Rocky Mountain Vibes is a s'more cracker. It's got a marshmallow with his hands out doing like the. It's like the Longhorn sign. I can't think of it. But the Rocky Mountain Vibes, Josh. When I was training someone a few years ago, we were looking at minor league baseball mascots when we had to board up a game back here. So one of the ones that I thought was unique, but they're no longer. Those are the Trash Pandas right there that you have pulled up. It used to be the New Orleans Baby Cakes. It was just a baby with the green Mardi Gras, green and purple Mardi Gras. So unreal. See, the minor league baseball, what it lacks in, you know, fun to watch, it makes up for in these cool mascots. So I'm going to go with the Rocky Mountain Vibes. It's a s'more, and it's a massive props. Josh, we can't have dead air, so I'm going to keep blah, blah, blah.
Yes, I have to go with the Trash Pandas. They're an affiliate for the Los Angeles Angels, the Rocket City Trash Pandas. They recently updated that logo, and I'm not just going to my reference to say that. I've always enjoyed their logo because I follow minor league teams. I really love the Durham Bulls. They're really cool. Of course, our very own Cedar Rapids Colonels down in Cedar Rapids, an affiliate for the Minnesota Twins. So, yeah, some of the minor league teams, they've come up with some really cool logos, and props to them for whoever's in their
give me a shirt or
department.
A hat.
I mean, wow.
Give me a shirt or a hat. Good grief. No, the other one I had besides Rocky Mountain Vibes were the High Point Rockers. Literally, it's a rocking chair with baseballs kind of engraved into the armrest. It's unreal. So, minor league baseball. We finally, aren't you happy we talked a little baseball today, Josh? I mean, we still got like 10 more months to talk about before the season ends.
No, good. Baseball does not go that long. Baseball will be done. Minor league is usually done in September, and then you have the majors that'll go through. If they go to game
post-season.
7, it's been November 1st.
Uh-huh.
And so that's happened
a couple times
here.
We're in week 9 of college football by that point. Stay away from my college football. Tired of it.
Just don't watch. Baseball has its channels and college football has its channels. Just don't watch.
You remember that a couple years ago when Aaron Judge was going for that home run record and they kept cutting into every game because here he was. Oh, is that close to breaking the single season record?
He did. Yep. Roger Maris.
On the AL side, he was like seventh because there's all these National League ones. So that, like the big media people, they had a good game between like, I don't know, let's see, who would be a good game that they would have? Probably an SEC game. So like Auburn or let's say Georgia and Florida. Oh, Aaron Judge is that bad. Let's watch this because he could tie it. And so we had to sit there and watch side by side Aaron Judge. Who cares? Can you imagine if you're watching a Major League Baseball game and like some Tulane football thing came up to you and you're looking at a rushing record for that? Oh, well, it might be the most in school history. We should watch it. That's how irrelevant that stat is. Any final thoughts, Josh, as we wrap it up here? I need to calm down. Listen to the music again.
Yes, congrats to Alex Ovechkin. He now has the most goals in the history of the NHL. He surpassed the great Wayne Gretzky with 895 goals, and what a way to celebrate for the Washington Capitals. He dove onto the ice like Superman and then was mobbed by his teammates. And want to give props to Wayne Gretzky. When you have these historic Hall of Famers have their records broken, not all of them handle it the best. He has been a great man in how he's handled it. He has been excellent giving Ovi the props he deserves, went to the games to watch it happen, went down and congratulated him in person, shook his hand, signed autographs, took photos with him. So props to Wayne Gretzky, the great one, for how he has handled his record being broken. And congrats to Alex Ovechkin on an amazing 20-year NHL career, now with the most goals and a chance to go where no other NHL player has gone, over 900.
Well, Josh, glad we got a hockey reference in there. I'm sure I have nothing to add to that because I don't care. Well, it's not that I don't care about Major League Baseball. Hockey, I just don't understand with its rules and the offsides and icing things. I don't know what they are, and I'm not going to learn because I know enough about other sports. I don't need hockey and baseball in my life. We'll talk to you next week, Josh.
Yes, we'll have to get into some more local sports at the start of things as we have.
We had PGA Tour, the Masters, Josh.
That's
once a year.
This was a special week, so we'll have to get into that next week.
It is special, but the thing is, we're going to talk PGA Tour as much as we can, okay? We're going to test how much you know about these golfers.
Okay.
And if you want to bring up hockey again, remind me so I can go out and do some work while you talk about hockey.
Oh, no problem. Yeah.
I can edit interviews, write stories.
Stanley Cup playoffs.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I can edit interviews, write stories. I don't need to talk about hockey. All right, that's going to wrap it up for Josh Hammond. I'm Mitch Williams. You've been listening to the Chuckle Huddle on the On the Go Media Podcast Network.
You've been listening to the Chuckle Huddle featuring Mitch Williams and Josh Hamlin. As always, you can find our latest podcasts online at radioonthego.com or on the free Radio On The Go mobile app.